I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
The late 20s is where I will make my strongest heave forward. And that's the thing, is like up until your early 20s are over, like 23, have as much fun as possible. Go crazy. Don't get in trouble. And if you do, make sure it's misdemeanor trouble at best.
Mm-hmm.
Your mid-20s are going to suck. I don't care who you are. I don't care how accomplished you are. Everyone feels like they're a failure in their mid-20s.
Why is that? It's so true. So feel me when I bring it, sing it loud. I'm from the loo and I'm proud. Run a mile for the cause. I'm righteous above the law. Play my style. Guys, it's your girl, Nakama, your favorite Jew from the loo. Welcome back to my podcast. And so this episode is one that I've been planning since the very beginning, but I wanted to wait. So today we have the man behind the camera, Murphy. Say hi to everyone.
Shalom.
That's really funny.
I'm just trying to be with it.
I love it. No, this is great. This is great. I wasn't expecting that. So I've actually gotten to know Murphy really well for the past few months, but there's still things that came up organically in conversations that I wanted to ask him more about his life and his opinions. And I decided to hold off because I knew that we were going to have an episode. And I was like, no, I want my reactions to be real. I want to get to know you with the audience. And so here we are, finally.
Thank you for letting me into your house all these times and, you know, now getting to know me.
You're welcome. So if you guys remember earlier on, episode 2, we had JT, and then, God, I don't even remember which episode, but maybe it was episode 8 or 9, we had Jeff.
Probably right around there.
Yeah. So Jeff was one of the creators of the Give More, Be More podcast, and there was a live meetup where I met JT, but that's also where I met Murph. So we're going to talk about first impressions first and foremost, how we know each other, how this all came to be. Because like I mentioned in JT's episode, I met you and mm-hmm. at the end we were networking and you said, hey, here's some of my stuff. If I could ever help you, let me know. And at the time I was like, sorry,
yeah,
I really don't know. And you were going around also like exchanging Instagrams with everyone. Mm-hmm. And I was like, can I just get your number?
You weren't using IG at that point.
I wasn't. I was never planning on going back ever again.
Mm.
Here we are.
Someone talked you back into it, huh?
No, I did it for the podcast.
Oh, I thought that was my advice. My bad.
No, sorry. I did it for the podcast. Got to do it for the show, the audience. Got to grow the, if you're going to grow something, has to be on Instagram.
Oh, I mean.
And socials.
True that. I'm on just about everything.
Yeah.
Sort of.
So to go back in time, it was January 2023 when we met, which is crazy. That's October now.
Yeah.
It's almost been a year.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I'm 30 now. I was 29 then. And it was the day after the first form banquet. So, no, I do remember that day pretty vividly, actually. And I remember what I showed you. I showed you a video that I made from EDC Orlando, and you work in real estate.
Yep.
And I didn't think they were comparable at all. I was like, hey, look at my skills. But that was one of those things that one of my mentors taught me. He goes, hey, if you have an opportunity to talk to someone, make a friend, do it. And if someone asks you what you do, have a sample. And that wasn't even my business at the point. I was just doing it for fun.
But really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I didn't even have my LLC yet.
That's crazy.
Actually, I might not have had my LLC yet, but it was right around that time that I got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
We all were sitting in this circle, and I really liked that they did this icebreaker where they had everyone introduce themselves and say a little bit about them, and then mm-hmm. what were their goals for the year.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we had recorded that or written it down or something, because like I think I kind of blacked out when it was my turn. because I was really nervous speaking in front of everyone.
Yeah.
I remember my heart was beating so fast, but I remember you were sitting kind of outside of the circle because maybe you came like a little late after everyone had already sat.
I was definitely late.
There was no more chairs.
There was none.
They weren't expecting that many people.
Right.
And so you were sitting on a bar stool, so you were already like a little higher than everyone else. And I remember hearing that you were friends with Mark. And so I was like, okay, interesting. I see the connection now. And then I heard that you guys worked together. And then Mark even said that you guys didn't even like each other initially, or there was some friction.
I mean, it's one of those things that like we worked together for 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, me and Mark have very similar experiences in our upbringing. We've both been in trouble with the law, and we both ended up working at First Form. And it was actually Andy Frisella who said, look, man, if you are, you know, kind of having some trouble finding your way after you got out of trouble, I would go talk to someone like Mark. Mark went to prison for 5.5 years. And I met him, and the dude is competitive out the gate. He's very, very structured with his time. He would get in the building at like 4 a.m. and he wouldn't leave till 8 p.m. some nights.
Oh, wow.
And so like when I got there, I asked him for advice, and he was like, hey, man, you're kind of on my time right now. And Mark has a way of being so focused and so direct at whatever it is that he's doing. A lot of people can take offense to it.
Yeah.
I was no different. And that said, also, he is someone who is very focused on getting the job done. All the friends and stuff like that come after. So if you weren't directly like working with him, it was like, hey, you're asking for time that he could be doing that. I was this new guy off the line, really bad haircut. I gave myself maybe $200 in my bank account, beat up old Honda I used to trap weed out of. And so here's him. And I'm like, man, how did you get your stuff together after getting out of trouble? And he was just like, I live with my parents, bro. I'm like, that's what I'm doing. He goes, man, you just keep doing it.
Oh, wow.
And within like the next 2 years, we didn't really build like the greatest friendship, but I respected mm-hmm. him because he was just a really high performing dude.
Yeah.
And he brings out the best in people, whether it is you're trying to meet him at his level or you're trying to beat him in spite of him, be better than him.
Yeah.
And so right around the time we started working on the same team, I was his subordinate, and we actually started building a really close relationship then. And eventually he left First Form in June of last year, which is 2022. Mm-hmm. And whenever he really started going all in on Omen, I mean, we had done so much in such a short amount of time. I fell in love with the guy as a friend. I wanted to help him on his missions. He really brought out the best in me. And so at that point, he actually had hit me up. He's like, hey, man, I don't know how many people are going to be at this thing. I know you were just at the banquet last night, but like, wow. Could you just like come in and hang out? I'm like,
it's like, just be a body.
Kind of. And GMBM was really like starting to be its own thing. Mm-hmm. So like I said, I was still working full time for First Form. He had left probably about 6 or 7 months prior. Sometimes it takes a lot of time to build a friendship.
Yep.
But those are the people, it's like you've had to earn each other's trust and loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
Do whatever you can to keep it.
Yeah, for sure. Those are lifelong friends, not the fair weather friends that you have just working together every day.
Right.
Yeah, that's something I've been thinking about a lot recently, which mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into that right now, but because I want to focus on you. But I just remember like, for me, when I'm first meeting people, I'm a huge people watcher, but I'm also really big on energy. So it's like, I kind of watch how people are, what they're presenting. And I kind of try to come up with a story in my head mm-hmm. before I even interact with them and try to kind of see if I'm right. Like, is my intuition and my gut feeling right?
Yeah.
And so you wear a lot of dark colors, and I'm a graphic designer. So I notice style. I notice colors.
Yeah, everything's black and white.
Yeah. And I was like, I feel like you're just very serious and disciplined. That was like my first impression. And then also just the way you carried yourself. Like I noticed as each person was talking, you were like very intently listening to them, and you seemed to really be absorbing. You didn't seem to be on the edge of your seat waiting for your turn. You were just like actually genuinely interested mm-hmm. in everyone's story. And then afterwards, I think what really sealed the deal was I just really noticed how some people just left immediately afterwards. Some people kind of hung out, but they were just staying with whatever friend they took because they were too nervous to go alone.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of those people. I sat in a chair and I was like, hey, whoever comes, great. And you came by. You were going around to each person and you were introducing yourself. And it was like old school. Shake your hand. Hi, this is who I am. Here's a little bit about me. Tell me about you. Let's exchange numbers. Let's exchange Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember you just sat down and like we just started having a genuine conversation. And I don't remember how we got into it because You were quite literally a perfect stranger. But I think the atmosphere of the people there was growth-oriented, hard workers wanting to grow, right? Yes. And so we somehow got into talking about finances. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was so cool. And then you showed me your video and I was just like, I just felt like you had a wealth of knowledge and you just really broke things down in a way that I could understand it. And I even texted you afterwards for just advice on work and, you know, relationships with like your peers versus like your leaders. And your answer was literally so long. It had the little read more button that you have to do.
See, this is the problem because you don't have an iPhone. I would have sent you a voice message, but I couldn't.
Oh, well, I'm really glad you didn't because I ended up copying it into a Word document. I printed it out. It's in my journal. It was such a great answer that I still look back to it to this day. So thank you.
No, thank you. I mean, it's something that makes me feel fulfilled. Fulfillment is a topic I focus on a lot because you can make a lot of money and not be fulfilled. You can have a lot of friends and not be fulfilled. You could have a life that everyone looks at like, I want that, and still not be fulfilled with what you do. Mm-hmm. And personally,
get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday, good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
With all the things you said, even going back to my style of dress, I'm going to New York City for the first time this weekend. And spiritually, I was like born in Brooklyn. Like, yeah. I wear Tim's, Jordans, and a whole lot of neutral tones. I like blacks and whites and, you know, a splash of color here or there. But it's kind of like the artist in me, the, you know, suffering artist in me.
And you're Italian.
And I'm super Italian. I'm super.
Born and raised for Brooklyn.
Super Guido. But St. Louis boy through and through, just spiritually from there.
I get it. Spiritually, I'm a Manhattan girl.
Okay. Definitely Queens or Brooklyn, though. I ain't got money like that.
I'm a Park Avenue princess.
I'm a little bit Donald. No, I'm kidding. But as far as kind of like my attitude and demeanor, I would definitely say you're spot on with that, which is I can talk a lot. I'm a natural kind of gift of gab type of person. Everyone from my tattoo artist to, you know, my mentors have all told me like, hey, your gift is verbal communication. You can tell people things straightforward and honestly, and you don't really shake in your boots or get nervous about it. And at the same time, you have a way of uniting people with that too. Mm-hmm. They've also been keen to tell me sometimes you just need to shut the hell up though. That said, I've always taken it really personally that I never just listen to respond. I always try to like listen to make sure that I really grasp what the other person is saying, because most of the problems in my life with other people have typically come from poor communication. Like, I used to work in bars, for example. Mm-hmm. I've been raised in restaurants. The biggest thing is when everyone's stressed out, no one communicates. And so communication is a thing. If we all practiced a little bit more active listening, and we spoke to communicate instead of respond, what you get is you have that energy where people are kind of synergizing off of one another and you feel comfortable to reveal things, hence why you texted me. And I remember what you had texted me was to the effect of, hey, these are my options. What would you do if you were me in this situation? And just to summarize, I gave you the talk that, I mean, even when I've been in jail, I've given people motivational speeches. I was like, the basic thing that I would focus on is don't worry about what anyone else does. Just be so good that they can't ignore you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's touching to know that some of the things I say really do help people.
They do.
That means a lot to me that you printed that out. You will actually only reveal that to me tonight before we said this, but like, that's pretty cool. And just, yeah, you know, I think it's pretty inspiring even for me to see that it's helped you so much.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think if you have the gift of gab and the gift of writing, you should put the two together and write a book someday. Because if you love motivation, I mean, tap into that.
I will.
And then eventually you can do like an audible, like an audio version of the book. Because then you could talk it out. You know what I'm saying?
No one wants to hear my voice for the 8 hours it's going to be to listen to my book.
I totally disagree. I think part of the reason why your advice is so well received and why people like talking to you mm-hmm. is because, yes, you do talk a lot, but what you have to say is worth listening to. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's you're also very intelligent. You're motivational, but the way you give advice is, it's a very humble energy. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't come across as like you're better than anyone else or you're the man and everyone should listen to you, because why wouldn't they want to listen to you? It's just more of like, hey, I'm just a dude. Here's my perspective. I've had this much life experience. So this is what I could share based on my experience. You always say that every conversation. You're like, based on my experience.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, here's my perspective. And I think that's why it's so well received. And that's why people like talking to you.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And I think more people would have confidence in speaking to just anyone if they had to realize that you don't have to be an expert in something for people to want to listen to you.
Yeah.
Credibility is important. Sincerity and objectivity, all those things are very important to me. Yeah. And so before I give anyone advice, and it's just advice, you know, I don't try to like say, hey, you owe me for this or anything. It's that I think I can help somebody. Even if I don't have direct experience, if I have a good idea or a good grasp of what it is mm-hmm. that they want and need, that's the salesman in me. It's not about me. It's about like, how do I help you facilitate the best option for you? And if I just get to walk away feeling like, hey, someone's going to have a better experience because of me.
Yeah.
I want the world to have more of that. So I have to lead by that example.
Yep. And I would also add on to say that I feel like, you know, you came on as my video guy, and that was back in May, early June, I want to say. So it's been a few months in the making, and it's been sometimes every week, sometimes mm-hmm. every other week. It just depends on our scheduling. But I feel like our friendship has grown a lot during this time, to the point where today, knowing that you were my guest and I didn't have like another guest, like it was just going to be you, I was so excited because I had a day today and I just really wasn't in the mood to people. But you know, like when you have like your friends reach a new level where they're not people, where you don't have to perform. Do you know what I mean? That's how I feel like. I feel like you've transitioned into like the friend group where it's like, I don't have to perform in front of you. I can just be.
You probably wouldn't want to convey or like confide in me if you had to perform. I'm someone right. who is very much like surface level things are not needed. Mm-hmm. I don't care how much it's going to hurt. I don't care how embarrassed you are. I don't even care if I'm going to get mad about it. I'd rather you just be upfront and honest about what you think and feel.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people in especially recent memory have forgotten that objectivity and sincerity are so, I mean, they're two of my core values. I appreciate that because your growth from my side of the equation, because I do a lot of the video and all the technical stuff, but there is almost a coaching aspect to it too, which is.
Oh my God, I totally forgot to say that. It's like, he's my videographer, but he's also my producer, my creative director, and like my therapist all in one. So
it's a creative director and like therapist part. We call that coaching.
Right.
But that's tacked on top. It's been really cool because I've seen you become more confident, more assertive, mm-hmm. being able to self-identify in a way that makes me proud to say I've been involved with your project even more.
Yeah, love that. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. So we're here today. We're our best versions of ourselves today. We're only going to get better as time goes on. But I am really into the concept of like healing your inner child and how every day people are becoming more and more aware that inner child and our experiences of our childhood are really reflective of how we are as adults. Mm-hmm. So we're here to get to know you better. So let's dive into it. Let's talk about your childhood and also the fact that you say that you're just a grown child.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So I definitely do say that. Mm-hmm. And I think a big piece of it is that my imagination is something I've held on to through all the really terrible things I've been through and also put myself through in 30 years. Mm-hmm. I've always said, like, no matter how disciplined I may become or no matter how much personal development may turn me into the man that I'm going to be, at the heart of everything I do, I mean, I had gummy bears before I came over here. I still enjoy cartoons. I have an entire sleeve dedicated to my favorite anime. And I mean, I even on YouTube, I'm watching like theatrical analyses of my favorite Cartoon Network shows.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a crazy blend of the kid I was and the adult I will be.
I really love that. That's really cool.
I appreciate it. Ed, Edd n Eddy, top five experience of my whole life. But I was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri. I will be from St. Louis and proud until I'm not kicking. And I was raised in a single parent household. My parents were never married. My mom was a waitress and a bartender in South St. Louis on the Hill for pretty much most of my life up until being an adult. At that point, her restaurant that she worked at closed down. And my biological father was a guy who worked for Coca-Cola most of his life. And he ran forklifts. But before then, he got into a lot of trouble with the law, things that I would almost repeat, but he took it to a level that I really didn't. I mean, I got involved with like kind of like party drugs in college. He was involved in like drugs throughout his whole life.
Yeah.
And it was something that I never really quite respected my father's energy. And as I got older, my mom told me, she goes, hey, well, just so you know, like the weekend I found out I was pregnant with you, I also found out he started living with another woman. So I went to his work and I beat his ass.
Good for her.
I love my mom. And I don't think she told me that till I was like maybe like 19 or 20.
That's fair.
And
that's actually really respectable that she like held that in until you were an adult.
She did a lot of things she didn't have to do. And she really set an example for me as a young man that as a young kid, I don't care what your background is, most young kids are selfish. It's you have to depend on someone else, and you think the world revolves around you, because basically until you get the talk at 13, like, hey, the world kind of does.
To interject, there's a Jewish theory or belief, I should say, that's really beautiful, which is like when you're born as a baby, you're born with like your fists clenched. Mm-hmm. And then when you die, there's a special group that comes in called the Chevra Kadisha to prepare you for burial. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they open up your hands. That's part of the process.
Oh, wow.
Before you die, your hands are open. And the concept is that we're all born selfish and takers naturally. And some people can go their whole lives that way, but it's on us. The onus is on us to learn to open our hands and to give.
And also going to interject real quick. I feel like since he's over in Israel right now, I feel like I heard Ben Shapiro say that exact same thing within like the last week.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blast tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Warm season's greetings to you all from Menards.
Well, 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 that's called serendipity.
Shout out Daily Wire. Shout out Ben. Love you, buddy. So as that young man, I saw my mom work basically four nights a week. It was like 12-hour days, all things considered. Mm-hmm. She would get me up for school, get me out the door, run the errands, cook the meals, take care of her mom, who was an ungrateful devil from Yugoslavia. And there's a lot of bad blood there as far as like my feelings on my grandma and how she treated my mom and her sister, but that's another story. But she actually kind of was my second parent growing up, because when my mom was working and my birth father wasn't really in the picture, on weekends he was kind of like a substitute parent. Mm-hmm. My grandma would do the most of the taking care of me till my mom got remarried at some point. And then my stepdad, who was a very pristine father figure for me.
How old were you when your stepdad came into your life?
I was 10.
Okay. So that's, I feel like that's really a good age to have like a father figure step in.
It was, but the problem with it was, is that at the point of life where I had been at that point, you know, you're kind of a teenager at that point. Yeah. Is about where that starts.
Oh, I forgot about that term.
Proud family, the good version of the proud family. I didn't play sports growing up. Mm-hmm. I was a very sensitive kid. I was kind of a couch potato. Again, sugary cereal, cartoons, comic books. Those are kind of the things I got off on as a young man.
Yeah.
And my stepdad was raised in a generation in the 50s and my stepdad's like 85 now. So Right. Think about that. He was raised, his father died about the time that he met me, you know, age-wise. And he had to take care of him and his mom. He played three sports. He was a Marine. Mm. If I had had that impression a little bit earlier in life, I probably would have ended up subverting some of the trouble I got in later on in life. But I'm not going to say like I'm sad I went through those things, because they helped turn me into the person who you introduced today. Basically, my childhood was I would get beaten up for being a little bit heavier. I wouldn't know how to defend myself. I would cry a lot. And then I would kind of, you know, subdue all my pain and all my sorrows with kind of neglecting the problem by doing what lazy kids do.
Emotional eating. I wouldn't call that like neglecting.
We didn't really get to the root of the problem ever.
Right. Well, that's emotional eating.
Yeah.
That is the core of it. Yeah. And like, I think it's a blessing and a curse when you have the kind of body, because I have the same kind of thing where it's like mm-hmm. my body will show if I'm not eating the right things. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people who struggle with emotional eating, and it's almost a blessing when your body does show it yeah. because then there is a certain point in your life when you begin to learn mm-hmm. how to take care of yourself.
Absolutely.
You know?
And I, being that kid who was really sensitive and didn't really fit in with anyone too well, I bounced from like friend group to friend group. I really got okay with the idea of just being by myself. Solitude, isolation, they were kind of like
peaceful,
sort of. I had imaginary friends. My mom, this is before you could like stream things. My mom would buy me like all the seasons of like Family Guy and South Park that were available. Mm-hmm. And I would watch them in my room by myself. And then I would go take the jokes and I would do all the perfect impressions of these characters. And I would say it word for word, all the bad words you're not supposed to say. And I would then go to school and rehearse for the friend group that I had at the time. And it kind of gave rise to me being like the gift of gab kid, as well
funny
as
guy.
Kind of like the clown too.
Yeah. Yeah. And, that's funny.
And at the same time, since my mom worked in restaurants and bars and all that, she raised me from a very young age to be a conversationalist, which I served tables and, you know, I tended bars and did things of that nature. So I was raised as this young kid who wasn't really good with people his age, who got beat up a lot. But when you put me in front of adults, everyone loved me. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, I'd shake your hand, call you Mr. This or Mrs. That. I would ask you about since the last time I had seen you. And little by little, like, it kind of created this like awkward teenager mm-hmm. who was kind of a smart ass, who was kind of addicted to pop culture, was kind of cocky and kind of sassy, but at the same time was really sensitive.
Right. It almost also feels like you were at the same time, I think, intellectually functioning as an adult, because you had a lot of skill sets that would help an adult man. Mm-hmm. But like your teenage guy friends or even like teenage girls couldn't appreciate. So there was like this, that more sensitive intelligence side. Mm-hmm. That's not like the place that teenagers really are like, yeah, you're so wise. We love this. It takes a while to get popular in that way.
The guys definitely didn't like it. No, the guys were all threatened by it because you use some words that seventh grade kids don't understand and they're going to start calling you, you know, slurs of any kind of way, shape or form. But that's seventh grade boys.
Yeah.
On the other hand, though, because I had been through a lot of like adult experiences, like, again, my dad wasn't the greatest dude. I saw some hard things growing up in his house. And of course, like my grandma, who raised me most of my life, she started to really fail towards about the time I was like in my tween years, between like 10 and 12. She got really, really bad with a bunch of different strokes and dementia and lung cancer. So while my mom was taking care of me, she was also taking care of her mom. And her mom was someone who didn't treat her very well. So seeing that and seeing what my mom went through, and
it's
then
a lot.
It was, and I was getting bullied. Again, my dad wasn't really there. He was absentee.
And meanwhile, you're just a kid.
I'm just a kid. And I'm starting to see things that adults do, not my mom per se, but how adults cope with their emotions, mm-hmm. alcohol, drugs, staying out, even when they have kids, you know, staying out all night, 5-6 nights a week. It started to really teach me how unfair life could be. And I just kind of tried to ignore it. And later on in life, especially when I was, you know, a legal adult, it kind of bled through when that insecurity started to manifest and some of the trouble that I would get in later on in life.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, honestly, that you got into any trouble later on in life, because that's a lot to go through and to deal with yeah. at once. It's relatable, unfortunately, but like, it's still your own unique story. Mm-hmm. And so, first of all, thank you for sharing that part of your life with us.
Appreciate it.
And then, so moving forward, you mentioned that you got into more trouble later on, and then eventually you went to jail. And I just learned the difference between jail and prison. Yeah. But they're synonyms. They're not. My bad.
It's all good.
But you know
what? We'll forgive you.
You live and you learn. Okay, so how old were you? What led up to it? Tell us the whole story.
So with going to jail, there's a difference between like doing a bid and like getting time mm-hmm. and being in holding. So just for context purposes, I have never done a stint. I've never been told by a judge, hey, you have to go do X amount of time for the crimes you committed. I have been locked up quite a few times, just, you know, in passing, like basically what had happened the first time I ever really got arrested is about the time I turned 18, I had basically been a dare kid all throughout college. Like, you couldn't catch me drinking.
A dare kid?
A dare kid.
What does that mean?
Like, to resist drugs and violence, you'd have, like, the lion, and, like, cops would come in and talk to, like, your classroom in every grade, like, once a month, and be like, don't do drugs, stay off drugs, just say no, the Nancy Reagan slogan. And, like, all the while, it's like, you know.
So it's called a dare kid?
Yeah. So, yeah.
I think it's really interesting that it's called a dare kid. In the Jewish community, they just tell you that you'll never get married.
That's disturbing. I know plenty of Jewish people who did drugs who are married now.
I know. I'm just saying that was like, I think my mom just used that threat with me because I was always such a romantic as a kid and I always got into trouble. And so like starting in second grade, like nothing worked. Like there was nothing that worked to get me in line except for one threat, which was if you don't act this way, no one's ever going to want to marry you. Mm. So probably need therapy.
Your uncle can help.
You can't go to a family member.
Oh, what's that about? All right. Well, I can still go to him.
Yeah, you can still go to him.
He gave me his card, by the way. But about the time I turned 18, I was kind of like, you know, let's break some rules. It's gonna be fun. Because my birth father had been so into like hard drugs, mm-hmm. speed, crack, meth, whatever you get his hands on, crank, which is kind of mixing the two. He kind of like led is the archetype of don't go down that road. But I also kind of felt like a square. I was like, you know, I don't take any chances. I don't do anything scary. Mm-hmm. I had never really traveled before then. Yeah. My parents took me to Mexico when I was 13. So I was like, you know what? Let's smoke some weed. And it started off as smoking weed. And then it turned into like smoking a lot of weed.
Yeah.
I kind of like broke the fourth wall. I was like, oh, this is why people do this. This is why those movies are so funny.
Did you start seeing the fourth dimension?
I started seeing the ceiling a whole lot and the bathroom sink and the toilet.
Oh, God.
But eventually, especially around here in St. Louis, you know, parents know when your kid is staying out all day and night, mm-hmm. they come home smelling like weed. They're not just smoking weed. They start having new stuff you didn't buy for them. Stuff that's completely out of the realm of like, okay, $200 pairs of shoes. You are 19 years old. You make like $8 an hour. What are you doing?
A little sketchy.
Yeah. I started really getting loud with what I was doing. And so me and my best friend at the time, we got really, really loud about our spot, which was his mom's basement in this little duplex right off of Lime. And basically we would spend like 9, 10, 12 hours in this place, just like smoking, having people over, selling them stuff, leaving, coming, going all hours of the day. And the first time I ever really got arrested.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
It was, I think, Super Bowl 2011.
Okay.
Maybe Super, it was Super Bowl 2012, actually, because I had just graduated high school. And my other friends, like little brother, you know, he would come buy from us and we'd rip him off, but he didn't care because he was like a high school kid. And you're like, oh, we're cool college kids. And they were smoking a cigarette, of all things, on our front porch. Well, they look like kids. Kids these days look like kids when I was like a toddler. You know, it's like the youth is ridiculous. And so they reported it as a kid was sitting on our front porch smoking weed. Well, this is 2012. Weed's not legal here yet.
Right.
And so my friend's mom, she didn't know she could deny a search without a warrant.
Oh, shit.
So my homie runs down his downstairs and there's like,
wait, pause. My brain needs to understand this for a moment.
Yeah.
Okay. So I know if like a cop wants to come search the premises, you could say, do you have a warrant?
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
But if you don't, I guess, ask for that right and you just let them in, they can, because you're just like, oh, here's my home, stranger.
At the end of the day, probable cause is going to be subjective officer to officer. And a lot of different things are going to play a role in how it works.
Okay.
The biggest thing is if you say less than necessary, That's always, you always have Miranda rights. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to an attorney. If you don't have the funds for an attorney, one will be appointed to you. Do you understand these rights as they've been read to you? They actually say that to you when you get arrested. So the fact is you can deny search and seizure. If they have a warrant, you can still deny it, but they're probably coming in. There's nothing a judge is going to say about it. They have the legal papers. So always ask if they have a warrant. Don't ever just let anyone in. And whether you're breaking the law or not, because there are cops who work for the law who are not the best. They're our best and brightest.
Right.
Some people do abuse the law in order to further their career or to prove something to someone or themselves.
Right.
Now, I don't think that's the wide swath of them. This guy was actually really cool, but he came in and he's like, all right, guys. And he looked it around and my homie's little brother and his friend's like, you guys look like you're 13. They were like 18. Thank you. The whole basement smelled like weed. He goes, I know you guys are smoking down here. If you give me whatever it is you've got, I won't search. He was cutting us a deal. And so my friend whose basement it was had priors. He had already been in trouble with the law. Mm-hmm. These other guys were 18 years old. Their parents didn't even know they smoked weed yet. And so I was like, I'll take it. I knew where a little quarter ounce of weed was, so about 7 grams. It's a misdemeanor. Gave it to him. And he technically wrote me out my first arrest. He goes, hey, I'm supposed to bring you in, but since you just gave it to me, you didn't give me a hard time, and it's Super Bowl, I'm just going to write you a ticket, but this counts as your arrest.
Okay.
So the first time I got arrested, I was 19.
But you weren't arrested.
Typically. No. But later on at 19, I formally was arrested. It was June 3rd, 2013 in Springfield, Missouri. And me and my partner at the time, a different guy, we got caught with 3.25 pounds of weed and an 8-ball of Molly.
So that wasn't enough to stop you?
No.
Why? Well, actually, is it because it was just such easy money?
Yes.
Okay.
And also the thrill and the adventure of it.
Okay. Especially after your childhood and being so square, as you say.
I felt incredibly helpless with the position I was in life. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw that my mom would like break her back for 12 hours a day, 4 days a week to bring home $150 a night, yeah, bartending and serving tables.
It sucks.
I was like, well, I can make that in like an afternoon.
Yeah.
And so I would. And I was able to pay all my own bills basically from the time I was like 18 to 23 without a job.
This is such a weird comparison, but do you think that's like, not that it's only guys who sell drugs, obviously women do as well, but do you think that's almost like the equivalent of how people's perspective is of like being a stripper or being on OnlyFans? It's just more of like, maybe the circumstances they come from. I don't know. I'm just asking.
Well, there's
asking for a friend.
Well, there's an old Gabriel Iglesias joke. And
oh my God, I love Fluffy.
Yeah.
He's the best.
I am not a stripper. I'm an entertainer.
Okay. Well, I wasn't a drug dealer. I was a florist.
Okay.
There is a little bit of like coaxing your ego, which is like, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a businessman. I sell things.
You're like, I'm the man.
You feel like it, but yeah. Sometimes there's a guy in front of you who knows he's the man and he's willing to like put a gun in your face to tell you that.
Yeah.
Been through that.
That's really deep into it.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. So you got officially arrested later when you were 19.
Yep.
Did you stop after that?
No.
Okay.
I didn't stop hustling basically until I was 23. Because
wow,
because I was able to pay all my own bills. The court dates keep getting pushed back. You get a good enough lawyer, sometimes they get just everything thrown out, but I didn't have the money to get it all thrown out. Basically, like the first time I got arrested, which was that fiasco at Super Bowl, mm-hmm, we got that moved down to a littering ticket. Paid it, it's gone. The next time I got arrested, that was actually a class C felony because I was caught with a controlled substance. We were going to get that moved down to just SIS probation, which is you go see someone once a month. I was put on 5-year probation, but they gave me a stipulation of what they call 30 for 30, which is every 30 days on the front end, you don't mess up or get a negative remark from your PO. They take 30 days off the back end. So your 5-year probation turns into a 2.5-year, more if you screw up. Basically, I just kept having more and more fun. I kept making more and more money.
Yeah.
I rushed a fraternity. It was a great time when you know how to speak and you have nice clothes and you have drug money and you get into the bars and you know all these sorority girls, like you get high off that. That's your identity. That's your whole persona.
Yeah.
And it starts to eat you up because it went from being like, hey, here's weed and something else every now and again to what can I throw up my nose? What psychedelic is around? I'm not going to school today. Let's day drink. Let's do something really stupid. Hey, let's go 14 hours on a drive with a suitcase full of money. Let's come back with some stuff that could land me in prison for the rest of my life.
So, curious question. Is there anyone out there who like deals but doesn't do it themselves?
Like top of the food chain?
Or just in general, like, are there people who just like do it for the money and do it for like almost the thrill, but they themselves are like, that stuff isn't for me.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the 10 crack commandments. Never get high on your own supply, which is to be a successful hustler. The best hustler is a good businessman who doesn't get high on his own supply. Meaning if you sell weed, you don't smoke weed. If you sell cocaine, you don't use cocaine. If you sell any drugs, it's mostly best if you don't use any kind of adulterating substance because it clouds your mind and gets you into trouble and can get you stolen from or killed. So absolutely, those are some of the best businessmen there ever were. I was not such a guy.
Right.
I wanted to party my face off. But when it was Black Friday of 2016 was like my last like plot in the act arrest. I was leaving my same homie's house who, when that Super Bowl party, it's that same friend.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when we started really getting deep into it. We started not moving weed so much as we were controlled substances because the profit margins were just stupid. When you come from a place like St. Louis and you go back to a college town like Springfield, you have that on your name. People know who you are already. You're going to make a shit ton of money. And so I was like, cool, let's send it. I ended up getting pulled over for my tags being expired. I had just gone to White Castle with my fat ass. I was on probation and I had been partying all day long. He searched the car. He found it. And basically I was already on probation. I'm like, I'm dead. I'm dead. And so
you reached that moment where you're like, I pushed it just a little too much.
It really hit me how much trouble I was in when they put me in like an individual holding cell. You're like, all right, we're going to take the thread out of your jacket and the laces out of your shoes. And
oh,
I was like,
shit.
Why? I'm like, well, we're going to tell you it's not so you hurt us, but it's honestly so you don't hurt yourself. And I was like, would I do that? Yeah, I would.
You would?
Oh, yeah.
Just because you were like ashamed?
No, because I was already in trouble. My friend was the person who I got it from.
Mm-hmm.
I had made a huge play and like all the excess money I had. Well, now I had to go pay off a lawyer and also all the money I would have had to do that. So just got taken by the cops.
So just thinking about it all would be so much that getting yourself out of that hole would be so overwhelming that taking your life would be easier.
Yeah. It was like a lose-lose situation because I was going to have to tell my PO, like, hey, I got in trouble. My friend was going to think that I told on him if I just walked out of there. And so I was like, well, what do I do? I thought on my toes and I just told him a story. I was like, hey, totally got it from another county. If you were in South County, which is where, you know, my stomping grounds were, I made up some stuff. I'm like, hey, I got it from North County. They immediately were like, well, there's nothing we can do about that.
Oh.
So I kept my friend's name out of my mouth. I sent them on a wild goose chase.
Good.
But by doing that, I admitted that the stuff was mine.
Was it yours? It was both of yours?
It was caught on me, but they wanted to know where I got it from.
Okay.
So you tell them the story of, well, it's not from around here. Mm. If it's outside of their county, outside their jurisdiction, they have no reason to go looking for it. So
they caught you and not your partner.
Correct. And so I took the fall.
Damn.
I led them in the wrong direction. And I was like,
it's very noble.
No, it's stupid at the same time because I shouldn't have put myself into the situation.
But that's kind of the loyalty that I feel like a lot of people get to in these situations where they're thinking about their friends. They've been through a lot. They're not thinking with their head.
There is the fear factor too, though, because my friend...
Using my GI Bill taught me I can do anything. And seeing me graduate taught my daughter she can too. VA benefits cover tuition, housing, and supplies. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Was in way deeper than I was.
Mm-hmm.
He had made it his absolute persona. Like, he had been done with weed. He didn't care anymore. Like, he wanted to be hard drugs 24/7.
Doing it or selling it?
Both.
Damn.
And it had eaten him up inside. And so when I called him the next day, I was like, bro, I need your help. And eventually, like, I saw him like another day later. Those were like the longest 2 days of my life. And he was just like, basically like, dude, you know, you're really fortunate you didn't say something because I would like walk up on your parents' house with just something in hand.
So end of friendship.
And more than that. He was serious about it. At least in his terms, when you get to the level he was trying to get to, if anyone says a word on your name or endangers your money-making process, then...
You just see red.
Yeah. and you're willing to, because the chain of command, he was like a step up higher than me. Well, the people he went to get that kind of stuff, like that's a big no-no, even just getting caught. So, you know, I did him a solid, and that eventually was like the end of our friendship, for lack of a better word. At that point, I was on the straight and narrow. I went and talked to my PO. He goes, "What are you doing?" I'm like, I'm an idiot. I wanted to make a little extra money. I told him, I'm like, dude, I'm just holding it for a friend. Because they didn't get me for sale or distribution. They just got me with possession. No intent to distribute.
Right.
That was the thing that I signed up for when I told him that story, was that I was going to get slapped with a felony and basically read my rights right then and there. Like, hey, this is going on your record. But because I wasn't a dick to them, and because I quote unquote was, you know,
took ownership.
Yeah. For lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, okay, well, we're not going to hit you with intent to distribute. And I did have some like weed and stuff on me. Like, we're not going to hit you with any of that. But the stuff that you got, you're going to get hit with possession of a controlled substance. Whatever. I'll deal with it. So for the next like 3 years of my life, I worked in every restaurant I could, every bar I could. I was going to school. And eventually I even worked at supplement superstores for a little while. But retail, that kind of high discipline environment, I wasn't ready for it yet.
Yeah.
So those next 3 years were really like fundamental for me, because as my friend went deeper into the stuff, I went deeper on the straight and narrow path. I still like to party every once in a while, but like I really cut out the hard drugs. As of today, I haven't done cocaine or thrown anything up my nose since 2017. So that's 6 years at least, right? Actually, it's like 6.5 years now that we're in October. I went from being super overweight, just super depressed and messed up all the time, to like figuring out, hey, if you do the character building stuff, you're going to like yourself a lot more.
Yeah.
And things are going to work out a lot better for you.
It's been really interesting hearing your story, because as you've been saying, your timeline, I was in my head thinking where I was in life mm-hmm. during those years. I was like, what was I doing?
Nothing. Not nothing.
Talk about being a square.
Wow.
That's a really incredible story. Honestly, like, I think it's awesome that you were able to take that level of accountability in that moment to say, yeah, it sucks, because now I have to go back to almost doing what your mom did, like working jobs that don't pay a shit ton of money. And like, you had experienced that taste mm-hmm. of getting that kind of money. So honestly, like, I can't even imagine what that's like coming down from that and like just building yourself up, like the honest way, one brick at a time.
It's humbling.
Yeah.
It's
definitely your whole persona though.
Yes.
Your whole persona is very like humble.
And that was the thing that I realized when I started like succeeding at the jobs I used to like peer down my nose at, or more so the jobs I had to go back to, because mm-hmm. I was raised my youth in restaurants. Service was kind of my second language. And so I was really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was though, is that I just knew that where I was at the time, like I was still on probation. You know, I got off one probation. They gave me another one. I spent like 5.25 years in the system, which was a lot of time and money and drug tests and a lot of trying to subvert expectations of the man, because I was pretty much on the straight and narrow, but I didn't give up smoking weed. I didn't give up drinking. Like I yeah. just, you know, I played my cards right. But eventually I had been like, dude, there's a real ceiling to your potential here. You're still in your college town. You still go to the same bars, and no one who's there looks like someone who you used to know. So like, what are you still doing here? And I had always said my whole life, I'm never moving back to St. Louis, but it was about this same time.
Where were you?
I was in Springfield still.
Oh, okay. I missed that part of the story.
So when I had gotten into all that trouble, I was living in Springfield, Missouri.
Okay.
I was going to college. I was in a fraternity. And really, I was in my college town to hustle more than anything else. I also wanted to get out of St. Louis. And I had dreamed of going to like to a big state school pretty much my whole life.
You wanted to get out of St. Louis just because you wanted to be a new person, like kind of.
I just had been in St. Louis my whole life, and I didn't want to live and die here.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to go have the traditional college experience. I racked up about $36,000 in debt and obviously two felonies, one that stuck. But in about a year.
That's what you had told me about. You're 36. I didn't know about all this other stuff.
And so I realized that with the standard I had been living, which was, I was disciplined now, but I really didn't have anywhere to go from there. And that there was something about it that made me feel fulfilled. I was like, well, what can I do? I love fitness. I really wanted to do big things with social media. And one of my homies from high school had started working at First Form, and I was a huge fan of Andy Frisella. I had been shopping at his first ever store where he started his journey.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah. And so I asked my buddy, I was like, hey, what does it take to work at First Form? And he's like, I mean, dude, look, you've had a great transformation, but like, I know you've been in trouble. So like, if I'm going to get you this job, like, just don't screw me on this. I'm like, bro, whatever it takes, I got you. He goes, you're going to be making like $12 an hour. I'm like, send it. Okay, you got to be here at like 5 a.m. Cool. Till like maybe 2 or maybe 6 p.m. Okay. Okay, like 5 to 6 days a week. Sure. Sometimes 7. I don't care.
That's so interesting because you literally just said before that working at the S2 stores doing like that typical corporate life was too much.
That's not corporate though. It's retail.
Retail. I'm sorry.
You're good.
It was just like that lifestyle though. But working for your hero, you were willing to do it.
With the S2 thing, it was, it's a much more regional based company. Mm-hmm. Midwest is really the stronghold of it.
Yes.
I was not ready to take that on yet. But once I realized, hey, I've got to leave my college town. Mm-hmm. I don't care what it takes. I was 26 years old. I was cutting my own hair. This was like right before the pandemic. And I was like, I have to do this. The late 20s is where I will make my strongest heave forward. And that's the thing is like up until your early 20s are over, like 23, have as much fun as possible. Go crazy. Don't get in trouble. And if you do, make sure it's misdemeanor trouble at best. Mm-hmm. Your mid-20s are going to suck. I don't care who you are. I don't care how accomplished you are. Everyone feels like they're a failure in their mid-20s.
Why is that? It's so true.
It's because you notice that all the things that used to be fulfilling, like going out and drinking and being a woo type person, in my case, drugs, alcohol, being a hustler, being a player, being the man, it's not the same. You grow up and the world becomes very real. You start realizing like, oh, wow, I'm paying taxes. I'm seeing people my age get married. I'm seeing people my age have their second kid. I actually care about my credit score. How much debt do I have? You're not a kid anymore. You actually have to make peace with the fact you're 1/4 of 100 years old. You're halfway to 50.
Mm. Yeah. I don't think I ever got a chance to be a kid.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
It's okay. But you can still be a kid. Just one that pays bills and taxes.
Yeah. I heard a great way to phrase it once. It starts off a little scary, but stick with me for a second. The goal is to die young, as old as possible.
Yep. I would say so. And that's kind of what's cool about your late 20s too, which is where you are now, which I just left. Your late 20s are, hey, okay, you've taken your mid-20s and you've cleaned up all the messes of your earlier years. Mm-hmm. You've made peace with the fact that you're an adult. Now you get to enjoy the rest of your 20s. And all the people who are older than you in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, they've been telling you this whole time that it only gets better from here. I've been 30 for a year. No, not even. I've been 30 for 7 months. Mm-hmm. Hadn't been that much different than my 20s. But that's also how I look at it. And basically for 3.5 years, I worked at First Form. I went entry level. Within my first month, I almost hit Andy with my car after he put me on his story for like doing the best karaoke in company history. And he'll tell you, it's because you were smoking a joint on like your second day. No, it wasn't. I was going home to smoke a joint because I didn't have the nerve, the balls, or the audacity to smoke weed at First Form HQ. Thank you. And also, we had met multiple times before then. How could it have been my second day, Andy? Anywho.
What makes a better story, though?
The fact that he made me say it in front of a room full of 400 people, because like I came there and I was really scared to buy into the team. Mm-hmm. I've been by myself most of my life and I didn't trust a lot of people after getting in so much trouble.
Yeah. Fair.
I wasn't trustworthy for a lot of that time either. Mm-hmm. I was a guy you'd look at if I was dating your dog, I'd be like, oh, what is that tattoo on his left arm? And it's a misfit skull and, you know, a guitar with a scythe head on it. Like that could be a little sketchy. And I completely bought into the idea of like, hey, this is my life now. I'm going to work for this company. I got an audience with my role model. I'm going to get to know him. I'm going to get to know everything that this place was made out of. And it took me about a year to get moved into a salaried position. And I was there 6-7 days a week, open to close, didn't care. I would do all the extra work I could. I would sign up for every task that no one wanted to do. And I would do it. I made as many friends in the front offices and the salaried positions as I could. I would run half marathons. I've run like probably a dozen half marathons since like 2020, and one full marathon. I've done CrossFit. I've done jujitsu. I then got moved into sales and all that gift of gab plus the personal development, that started to really blend and mesh too. And I started seeing the opportunity that was in front of me. And I had asked Andy, I'm like, you know, someday I want to public speak. And he was like, yeah, you could probably be good at it. Well, like, how do I start? He goes, you got to start talking on your story. I was like, oh, that's what it takes? He goes, that's what I would do if I was you. Oh, cool. And so I started really buying into my social media persona. And about the time that, it's funny because that 3.5 years came to a close right after I met you. Actually, it was like 2 weeks, 3 weeks after I met you is when I formally had left First Form. And I left my salaried position. It was like 6 months after Mark had left. And I just wasn't happy doing what I was doing. I was in one of the most sought after positions in the company. I'd worked my way up from nothing. I gained a lot of respect. I'd built a very sizable brand for a guy like me. And I decided that I wanted to start my own business instead, mm-hmm. which is kind of where we are today.
Isn't it funny how, like, when one door never closes before another one opens? Mm-hmm. Did I just fuck up that whole quote? Can you tell you the right one? Because my brain's not working right now.
One door closes and another one opens.
There you go.
There you are.
See? Always there for me. That's crazy. But I think it's really cool how many times you, like, retransitioned your life and you're not afraid to start at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And you also, to me, this is what the privilege of getting older is. And what I think, this is what I've been falling in love with getting older, is the more experiences you have, you can look back. And while they might be different, one thing is reoccurring, which is you've entered a new situation, you've been at the bottom, and then you've worked your way up. And as you get older, you see yourself do it in more and more situations. And then there's that confidence mm-hmm. where you're like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm ready to just go forward. You know, something interesting that I don't know if you've experienced this yet or if you will one day. I hope you don't. But I did hear on Instagram this one girl who's an entrepreneur. She was saying how her dad gave her this advice about being an entrepreneur, where you're not a true entrepreneur till there's one night when it's like midnight. And you're in your bathroom and your head's in your hands and you're like, what the fuck am I doing with my life?
Oh, yeah, I've had that.
Been there?
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
That's good.
I'd been there when I was working at First Form.
That's good. That means you're on the right track. Keep going. You got to push through that shit.
I mean, my role model was sleeping on a piss-stained mattress with another grown man and their dog playing, like, Call of Duty. And, you know, eventually he turned into the man we know as Andy Frisella.
Yeah.
And I have been in so many situations that, you know, I wanted my life to be like a storybook, like a movie in a lot of ways, because I was raised on two films more than any other film. They are Goodfellas mm-hmm. by Martin Scorsese and Pulp Fiction by Quentin Tarantino. Those really talky movies, the characters you fall in love with, I wanted that to be my life. And so in those hard moments, which I still have moments like that, and you and I have talked about them too, mm-hmm. Whether they have to do with my business or my brand or my significant other, whoever, you know, the person I'm talking about or whatever the thing is that is the focus. The thing is that if you are going to have a life that people want to hear about, if everything is just smooth sailing, that's boring as shit. The best characters have a lot of conflict. External conflict, but even more interesting enough is the internal conflict. And I've been, you know, as a really straight and narrow kid to being kind of a villain, to being sort of an anti-hero, to kind of being back to the hero again. And because of all the things I've been through that most people, I don't wish on them. I don't want you to know what it's feel like to almost OD on coke. I don't want you to know what it's like to be in, you know, fights in the middle of Southside Chicago with one of your best friends at the time. I don't want you to know what it's like to try to sleep with 3 different people in one day because you think you're the man. Yeah, kind of a big thing to do. I don't want you to do that. I don't want my kids to go through that. But because I've been through that, I come on the other side of it and I can say to someone, yeah, I've been there. So you don't have to. Listen to me.
Yeah.
Because all those things I used to do to, like, shirk my character, I'd much rather be this person now than ever go back to being that person.
I'm processing. Sorry, that was like a lot to internalize, but it's really powerful. Now, this is my favorite and worst question that I've been asked, but I'm going to ask you anyways. do you have, like, maybe not, you don't have to answer it like so perfectly, but more like, dreaming and manifesting and, like, just putting intentions out there. If we talked about the past, what, 11, 12 years of your life?
30, sort of.
Yeah, but like I'm talking about from like when you really started to go down like a dark path.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
your childhood affected it, but when you took on,
yeah,
like
nine, that was, you 19 know, to 30.
Because I would say when you were a child, like you went through a lot of incredibly deep and like painful situations, but those weren't ones that you chose. They were put on you, sure. right?
Yeah.
That was more like fate putting it on you versus like what happened to you post 18, 19, that could have been avoided.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Just being brutally honest.
Sure.
You know, but like you've learned from that, you've grown from that, you've worked your way out, and like now you have your own business. Mm-hmm. What would you love to, like, if we were sitting here in this very same sucka, hopefully my paintings hold up for another like 10 years. 10 years from now, if we're sitting right here, what would you, just cliff notes, what would you like your life to look like? What do you hope for?
In 10 years?
Mm-hmm. Everything.
It's kind of funny you ask that because as of recently, and I've really been hammering on trying to live in the moment, which I've not been good at.
Can I just pause and say that, like, you can be as delusional as you want to be?
Of course.
Like, there is no...
I've been delusional to this point. It ain't changing no time soon.
I just think that, like, you shouldn't put any... Like, sometimes yeah. people are way too practical about the future. They're like, well, I think that this is what it could be. And it's like...
Yeah. In a lot of ways, I want to be doing what I'm doing now, which
That's
is...
awesome.
I want to have more property. Mm-hmm. To me, my biggest investment will likely be real estate and property because all the people I look at, they're like, hey, you should probably do this. Mm-hmm. I will probably have a few other businesses going. I may not be running all of them myself, but I will have money invested into things and hopefully the teams and the systems that I trust to move them forward. I think my brand, me and Andy once, you know, he gave me some real talk one day whenever I left to start my business. He goes, dude, you need to focus on your brand. He goes, that big mouth of yours. It's going to be really good for the internet. The world needs more of what you do. Thank you, by the way. Love you. I don't know if I'll have kids. I will hopefully have someone in my life intimately as a significant other who is down to have the adventure with me because settling down is one of those things that I don't know how much of it I can do.
Okay.
I like to travel a lot. I like to have experiences. I don't really care about stuff as much as I used to. I don't care about the flashy appearances. Mm-hmm. Like this weekend, I'm going to go to Miami, West Palm Beach, and New York City all in a span of 3 days. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go see my favorite artist. I'm going to hang out with two of my best friends in the world. I've never been to New York City or Miami or West Palm Beach. I want my life to still largely look like that. I want to be creating content for people. Mm-hmm. I want to be helping other people's dreams come to fruition.
I want to introduce you to just like all the people who can make you just be super successful. That's my dream.
If for some reason you get introduced to Ben Shapiro before me, just...
I'm Jewish. I'm fairly certain I can do it.
I don't think that matters so much.
It really does. I really think that I can find some connection.
I don't think that's how that works.
I don't think you understand Jewish geography.
I spend a lot of time in like the political and current events world.
No. For Ben Shapiro's team out there, hey, what's up? We all know what Jewish geography is, okay? This man doesn't. Got you.
Okay. Before we go, should I do my Ben impression? Joe Biden poops his pants on national TV. I never stop tapping my leg, and I will always talk like a fast Jewish kid from LA. All this and more on the Ben Shapiro Show. Little dead on. And if you ever like actually watch Ben, you'll... So here's my problem. And it's just, I've got the dude's, he is ironically the most hilarious dude in the world who I would never want to debate against.
Mm, yeah, I know.
And I don't agree with everything he says.
He's just very sharp and intelligent. He's fast. Very quickly.
He went to what law school? What it was, what, 20?
Mm-hmm.
He went to Harvard Law?
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, podcasts, if you're trying to stay in the know of what's going on in the world, Tim Pool, that's actually the live podcast I'm going to see tomorrow, the Tim Pool Daily Show, Timcast IRL, great. The Ben Shapiro Show. If you don't like the conservative point of view, you're not going to like him. Sorry, but it is what it is. And then Really F with Andy Frisella. Randy Kinsella. Andy Frisella. Not only has the dude been my employer, he's been my friend, he's been my leader.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
He's been an amazing role model to me. He still has not fired me because now I do contract work for First Form again.
Yeah.
And just being able to work even anywhere in his proximity, he just pushes you to be your best.
Behind the scenes, I have always been very curious. Like, he's a very dynamic person. He's a very strong speaker, very opinionated.
Absolutely.
Which I have to be in the right mood for, but I definitely like where his heart is. Mm-hmm. And something I've always been so curious about is, like, behind the scenes when he's not on camera, when he's not, like, speaking his heart, because he's a very passionate person. Yep. Is he soft-spoken at all? Is he more of like a chill, sweet, just lovable teddy bear?
I would never call him that. I think he would appreciate that I would never call him that. I mean, no, Andy is a regular dude.
Okay.
He even calls himself, you know, regular dude CEO.
It's almost like that persona.
I mean, when you think about like a guy who's achieved what he has, he should be walking around in like, you know, Prada, Gucci, Versace, all you know, Balenciaga, all that really just gaudy stuff. The dude walks around in a t-shirt, gym shorts, and a pair of like, you know, Nike Vapor Maxes. Chris Klein, his partner for 22 years, is even more like, he'll wear flip-flops and it'll be like 32 degrees out. S2 shirt from like 1999, gym shorts awesome. Like I'm wearing. The thing is he likes cars. Mm-hmm. He likes dogs. He's patriotic. And you just sit there and hang out with him. He'll just tell jokes. Yeah, he tells jokes at my expense.
He's a good person.
That's the kind of, but that's what I want my success to look and feel like. Yeah. Is that I don't want it to change the person I am. I wanted to bring out more of who I am.
So your concern with having a partner or having kids is that it will deter you from living that lifestyle?
No, I just want to give the person their due. The last relationship I was in, we were able to really treat each other very well for the brunt of it. Mm-hmm. For, you know, living regions away, we were still really able to focus in on each other and make it work. But the minute our priorities changed, I'm running a business, she's a full-time career, she's also a full-time grad student, we had to be really, really honest.
Yeah.
Hey, I love you. I will never not love you. I'm always in your corner. I also recognize that we've been having problems. And, you know, just on my part, being objective, I'm not going to be able to have much more time for you right now. If it's this hard right now, what are we doing? All right, cool. So, you know, it's something that, and she was a really high quality, is a really high quality person. Still in my life, still a great friend. We're still going to be involved. The thing is that it's hard, but I want her to focus on what's important to her, and she wants me to focus on what's important to me, be the best version of ourselves. Maybe we meet again someday intimately. At the very least, I have a good friend in the person. Whoever I marry or whoever I settle down with, I very much want that person to know that they are a priority. And even though the job or the business is what puts the money on the table and builds our dream, when things are less crazy and when we have more time to intimately focus on one another, that is when it all is the payoff.
I think that makes a lot of sense, especially for your stage in life that you're in right now. Like, you're just starting your own business. You're only 30 years old. I think they've said, you know, women have a biological clock. Everyone knows about that. Girls turn what, 28? And they're just like, let's go.
Hey, I will say this real quick. Maternity is sexy.
Maternity is sexy?
Moms.
Ah.
I never thought I would have a thing for like a really, I don't know why, because my mom was such a good mom.
Yeah.
But like, there is just something, because when you work in the fitness industry, you work with a lot of moms who are really, really busy.
Right.
The ones who really prioritize themselves and raise kick-ass families who are just based on core values and have like the utmost like respect for themselves first. Mm-hmm. I think hardworking, fit moms are just like, it's just like a godsend. Yeah. Like, your kids are going to grow up so awesome.
Yeah.
And I find like a good mom just like very attractive these days. And I don't know what it is.
I would say it's probably because your mom.
Probably.
And it's also probably just qualities that you respect.
Yeah. I think because my mom worked so, my mom worked really, really hard and she barely made time for herself.
You know, the same quality goes how women will see guys in relationships, whether they're boyfriends or husbands, and they'll find them so attractive. And it's not because they're taken. It's because guys are their version of themselves. Whereas like when they're single, maybe they're not showing those qualities.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's just an interesting psychological perspective to look at.
Protector and provider.
Yeah. But I think also, where was I going with this before? Damn.
Maternity is still sexy.
Oh, I was saying that women have a biological clock.
Yeah.
But something I've heard recently, like the past year, which was like a new kind of concept to me, but it's just practical. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. Women have a biological clock, but men have a financial clock.
Yep.
So for men, they're not necessarily thinking like, oh, damn, I'm 30, got to get settled down now. It's more about like every man's going to be different, but like there will probably, I'm assuming, because I've seen other guys go through the same thing where they're like, I don't know, I'm not ready for that. But it's like when you reach a point where you're going to be financially set up and things are running more smoothly and you feel like, okay, now financially I could provide for a family. I could be who I want to be. Mm-hmm. Then I think you might feel differently.
Yeah. I still, and that was the big point that her and I focused on, you know, as we started to split up, was that
it's a timing thing.
When you argue with someone a lot, one of the best things I've ever heard is you judge everyone else for their actions, but you judge yourself for your intentions.
Hold on. I need a moment to process that.
You judge everyone else for their actions, but you judge yourself for your intentions.
Okay. Let's break that down.
Okay. When people do things you don't like, you imagine that their actions are due to some bitter intent, something negative. You know, hey, the guy at work didn't talk to me the way I like to. He must have it out for me. However, I can be cross with people. I can be incredibly stern to people. I can say things to people. I said things to my significant other very plainly and very flatly that she wasn't ready to hear. And I was saying, well, I meant this.
Oh, I see. You, it's,
but she would do the same thing, and I would be like, hey, that's not a,
it's not what you say, it's how you say it. It's, my grandfather used to say it with love.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's understanding that everybody is going through something. As I try to be present in the moment and really dig into Stoic philosophy lately, it is, everyone's going through something. You're going through something. We talked about it before. Mm-hmm. I'm going through stuff. Don't need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. The point is that when you are doing your work, and being in a relationship is work, your mm-hmm. relationship with yourself is going to be how you treat other people too.
It's also a mirror, which it I think is the hardest part.
I have had a lot of things I've had to work on. And now that I don't have that person to talk to on the daily basis, to share things with, to hear things about, I feel like I took it for granted. I also have to realize that neither one of us is that same person from a year ago, a year and a half ago. We are quite literally different people. This idea of self is malleable and it's ever changing.
Yeah.
And as your priorities change and as you as a person change, it's like, I have to see what you brought to my life as something that made me better, something that challenged me. Even when it's not someone intimate, most people that enter your life and you don't want to lose them, there's a very big reason why. Part of it is attachment and suffering and this need to be validated because that's who your ego is. But part of it is also because that person is valuable, not just in terms of like how much they're worth, what car they drive. It's because they teach you something. They impact you. They make you laugh or smile. They make you realize that you are worthwhile. And sometimes when that dynamic changes, you have to remember that person was attracted to you for a reason. Mm-hmm. You cannot lose yourself. As much as the self, the ego, is a manifestation of all the things you want people to think about you, how you want to think about yourself. Mm-hmm. Someone saw something in you that was legitimate and honest and really, really enticing to build with. And just because it didn't work out then and there doesn't mean you need to sit there and throw your worth into the dirt. That is not what it is.
Yeah.
You have to say, what comes next?
I think more and more, even though I grew up as like, in the Orthodox Jewish world, I never quite understood our dating, kind of freaked me out a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because just use my brother as an example. He went to an all-boys school his whole life, never talked to girls. Mm-hmm. And then at the age of 24, told his rabbi he was ready to get married. First girl he dated, he was very lucky, ended up being the right girl, and it was his wife. Mm-hmm. And they dated for 4 weeks, got engaged, and 6 weeks later were married.
Ben Shapiro married his first girlfriend.
Yeah. I mean, but it wasn't girlfriend though. It was like just, it's a very different style of dating because there's no touching. There's no intimacy. It's like no physical connection at all. It's but like, it's so interesting because when you don't touch, you're so much more aware of whether it's there or not. You aren't messing around. Right. And so if it's not there, you're really not wasting anybody's time. And if it is there, you're like, okay, cool. We know that's there. Let's put that in a little box. And now let's talk about values. Where are you going in life? What's your purpose? Mm-hmm. Who are you? What are your, you know what I mean? Like, what are your values? What's important to you? And then you can really see if the compatibility is there. And like, I remember asking my brother so many times, I'm like, weren't you scared? Like, you essentially married a stranger. That's terrifying. Like, to me, I'm like, maybe at least a year, like all seasons of the year, get to know them, you know, see how they are when there's traffic, see them in the DMV, see them in like a long line at Schnucks.
Stay for a year, live together for a year, then. That's probably going to be my ethos on it.
I don't know. Everyone has such different opinions, which is also part of the confusion. But my brother, specifically, just to talk about his perspective, which I think is very interesting, he said, you're right. Sometimes you get lucky and sometimes you don't, which is unfortunately why there are more divorces in the Orthodox community now than there used to be. Because sometimes you just don't know and you make bad decisions because you're quite simply in your early 20s and a kid and maybe you don't know yourself.
Yeah.
But he said he got very lucky and it was more of that he saw her values. He saw who she was as a person. And recently I saw a dating coach say that like you have to ask who this other person is. It's like, what's your purpose? And does your purpose align with my purpose? And what's our purpose going to be together?
Yeah.
And then even more than that, if you're going to be doing something called marriage long-term or even just a long-term relationship, if you don't want to sign the paper, whatever, it's your choice. Every stage of your life is going to be a new recommitment to what your purpose is. And I think some people go through stages, like a lot of people say when they have little kids, not connected. And it's because you have to think about, okay, now that we have little kids, what's our purpose now? You have to constantly, like, this is your teammate. This is your partner. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like who this person was when I met when we were just young and in love and in a honeymoon stage. It's like you're constantly checking in.
Sure. I've learned a lot with how my dad treated my mom, how my stepdad treated my mom, how I treated girls when I was like in middle and high school and then when I got to college. And I've been in love 3 times in my life. Like, irrefutably, I loved that other person.
That's crazy that you've been around so many girls and it was only 3 times.
And the numerator versus the denominator is a very hard percentage.
That's what I'm saying.
It's really a hard percentage. And there's nothing, quote Ben again. Look, you want to go out and whore yourself out? You want to unscrew everything? Go ahead. But if you think you're going to be happy doing that, you're probably not. There is something about falling in love that is, you have to be patient with the other person. You have to grow with the other person. You have to realize it's not all about you. And if you're going to marry that person, if you're going to do the right thing by them, you got to be willing to put up with a lot of really hard times, because that's what manifests good times.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said earlier about a villain or someone who has a lot of conflict in their story. I'm not interested in a story that's just, hey, love at first sight. It was perfect. The end. No. It's a boring ass movie. No
one's paying. I don't really know anyone who has them.
Because it doesn't last.
Right. Well, also, that's Hollywood's little, you know, highlight. It's not really what a real love story is.
But the thing I will say about all three women that I've loved, you know, in a span of 10 years, they've all been within 10 years, is that each one of them found me at a completely different point of my life. And each one of them had very, very different qualities. The one thing is that, much like you said about your brother, is that chemistry. I gotta have good chemistry with someone. Mm-hmm. I don't care how hot you are. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care how, you know, anything that is not, how do I feel when I'm with you? And how do I feel when I'm not with you?
Isn't that the most insane thing? How sometimes you could be having a good time with the person, but then you walk away and you're like either drained or you're like, what the hell just happened? That was a shitty experience, but it seemed good. That's confusing to me. That's happened to me a few times with people.
Yeah.
I heard someone told me something recently that I thought was very poetic and beautiful, which was that to love someone is to learn them.
Yes. You got to learn how to speak that language, be fluent in another person.
But if that's your perspective on what love is, can you imagine like a whole lifetime of that? That's really cool.
I've seen my mom and my stepdad be married for quite a while now. Mm-hmm. I think it's been like, 15 years, 16 years.
Congratulations.
And it's like, you know, my pops was in his mid-60s when they got married.
Love that. Never too old to find love.
My mom was late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I see these two people who they can bicker, they can fight, but they're each other's best friend at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been an amazing role model for me to see those two fall in love and stay in love. And as I get to this next point in life, my, you know, early 30s, or they're trucking. I'm not interested in, quote, finding someone. I'm interested in being someone and letting me find someone who's also trying to be someone. We're going to make it work. It's going to be hard. It's going to be tough. It's going to be challenging, but that is what love is. And that is what the future of our family will be.
Have you watched Runaway Bride?
No.
Oh, okay.
Anything that's do with, no, anything brides, anything romance, nah.
Okay, it's a total chick flick.
Wrong.
Okay, I know it's a total chick flick, but I highly recommend. It's this girl who basically was like engaged to be married to 7 different guys. And right at the, like,
damn,
I know. And right at the moment where she was going to go to the altar, she runs away from them. And so finally this catches the attention of like a news reporter, and he comes to her town, and he basically ends up inevitably falling in love with her as well. But the difference between their story and like the past is with each, I'm going to spoil it for you because I don't think you're going to watch
I'm
it.
Not.
Okay. What happened was is she changed who she was to fit that person.
Yeah.
And so there was that moment of fear when she was walking down the aisle where she realized he didn't actually like her. Mm. And the way the reporter figured this out was he asked like all these men, how does she like her eggs? And each guy had a different answer because she always said she liked her eggs the way they liked it, kind of thing. Mm. And then finally in the end, it was really cool how they all got together. But what you just said was actually how he, oh God, now I need to rewatch it again. But I think either she proposed to him in the end, I think. And it was that whole thing of, it's going to be hard. We're both probably going to bail, but this is what it is. It was like, it was just the most realistic. You have to watch it. It was so good. Please do. It's Julia Roberts.
I don't care.
It was.
No.
All right. Thank you. I feel like we could probably do another episode. I could talk to you forever, but in terms of this episode, we're going to wrap it up. And as per usual, my tradition is always to say the quote that my podcast is based off, which is Ezehu Chacham, Hello Made Me Kol Adam, which means one who is wise is one who learns from everyone. So can you share with us either a quote or a life lesson that has impacted you that you want to share with the world?
Hmm.
I know it's really challenging to pick one.
But no, because I thought about this. Since we decided that we were going to do an episode together, I thought about this. And I think the most trademarked piece of advice I give people and wisdom I give people, it's almost twofold. Number one is take chances.
Mm-hmm.
As a young kid on the doorstep, I didn't like to take a lot of chances. It's why I became a little heavier. It's why I didn't have very much confidence. And it's why later on in life, I started to do the wrong thing. You have to take chances. You have to be willing to get hurt, get scared, be broke, be homeless. And that is where you will find your best self. Because on the other side of all those things is who you want to be. I have been homeless. I have been broke. I've been in trouble with the law. I've been on probation for 5 years. I got off. I made almost $100,000 working my career for my role model, who I am, sitting in my car. And now, I run my own business and I own my own house. And I still do contracting work for that company. The second part of that is also be dynamic. Do not be afraid to be dynamic. While you're taking risks, you are going to change. And people are going to look at you and be like, oh no, you're not the guy you used to be. You're Mr. This guy now. Okay, cool. If you are not going to be dynamic, if you're going to be a static human being, stay over there with your little staticky butt. I'm going to be over here changing, being dynamic, going to roll with the punches. I'm going to take a few punches. I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to cry. I'm going to scream. I'm going to fight. I'm probably going to get arrested again at some point. Not for drugs. But I'm willing to take risks and I'm willing to change. And if anyone out there is trying to figure out what your next move is, what's the most calculated risk you can take that's going to move you forward? And what piece of you can you leave behind so a better piece of you can grow and prosper?
I love that.
Shalom.
That was actually perfect because little did you know, shalom means hello, goodbye, and peace. It's that gut feeling right there.
What does Meshuggah mean?
Crazy.
I am Meshuggah as can be.
Mm-hmm.
Meshuggah boy chick. Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you. One thing about having the crazy Yugoslavian grandma, she actually taught me a little bit of Hebrew and Yiddish.
That's awesome.
Yeah, some of me are.
Well, you're always welcome to ask me any Jewish questions you want to. Not right now. We're ending up this podcast episode.
I'm a yarmulke.
You want one?
I do.
It's hilarious. Got you.
I don't know where it would been.
I got you. It's awesome. Wow, this has been such a fun episode. I'm so glad we waited, and this has been so great. We finally got to meet the man behind the camera. And we are everywhere where there are podcasts. If you want to watch the video version and you are not currently watching it, you can see it on Spotify and YouTube. And please, please, please go on YouTube because we're trying to grow our channel. Leave a like and comment, nice comments, and also subscribe. And then also follow us on Spotify and everywhere else. We also are on all of our socials as well, TikTok and Instagram. This is what you get for living right by Del Mar. Sirens all the time.
Yep.
Anyways, love you guys. Thanks for watching. Have a great week. Let's get it. Let's go.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.